Welcome to Career Practitioner Conversations. This podcast is presented by the National Career Development Association. This episode is hosted by Brian Hutchison, principal of Global Career Guy and a former NCDA board member. It features a conversation about the importance of career development in school counseling with Associate Professor of Counseling Grace Wambu and Assistant Professor of School Counseling Katie Lee Osruch.
Hey everyone, it's Brian Hutchison, aka the Global Career Guy. I'm so happy to be back hosting here on NCDA's podcast. And today, I'm reminded that I'm just one of the luckiest people in the world. The field of career development allows me to work with people that become friends, that become colleagues, and who I grow to admire over time. And today, I get to host a conversation about career development in schools with two of my co-authors of a recent high school textbook called School to Career. So I'm here today with, to me, Katie and Grace, but one at a time. Grace, maybe we'll start with you. Could you briefly introduce yourself to the audience today?
Sure. My name is Dr. Grace Wambu. I am an associate professor at one of the institutions in New Jersey. I love to teach career. I love career development. And that is like my niche going forward.
And you're a school counselor educator. So you have a background working in school counseling. Is that correct, Grace?
Sure. Yeah. So I have been a teacher, a high school teacher. I have been a school counselor, and I'm currently a counselor educator. And I train school counselors to prepare them to go and work with students from pre-K to 12th grade.
Great. Thanks so much, Grace. And hi, Katie. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. So I'm Dr. Katie Lee Osruch. I'm currently an assistant professor at the University of New York at Buffalo. And I also teach within the school counseling program here. So teach and prepare school counselors here in the urban area in Western New York.
Great. And I know for a fact, because I think I've witnessed this, but you've also worked as a school counselor in an urban setting in St. Louis, Missouri, correct?
Yes, I worked as an elementary school counselor in one of the many elementary schools in St. Louis Public School District and loved it.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to bring us together today is that while a lot of our research and a lot of our theory and hopefully a lot of our practice occurs within school systems, sometimes it's hard to create conversations for the public good about the reality of career development in schools, the importance of it, and what it is that we're trying to accomplish. So I think I'll start by just sort of throwing out that basic question of why do we think career development is an important component of school counseling K through 12? Grace, how about you?
Well, thinking about it, if we go by, say, the ASCA national model, stipulates that three domains need to be covered in the school setting, that is career, academic and socio-emotional development. However, our experience has been that the career development piece has been pretty much ignored in most of the levels. And yet we understand that for students to be able to be invested in their learning, they need to understand or they need to be able to connect what they are learning with their future careers. Otherwise, it might not make any sense to be in a calculus class if you don't know what that calculus can do for you, let alone in life. And so I do think that career development is such a critical part of learning because it gives purpose to even what the students are learning in the class.
You're preaching in career church for me right there, Grace. Yeah, I mean, it's that why question. And one of the things I always tell students is we have to be a different adult voice in a student's lives because adults are always telling students, just do this for a reason. And career can really help it sort of emerge from a student for them to find their own purpose in a school system. I love that, Grace. Now, another thing that I think a lot of people think, and we see this in schools, is that the focus of career is, I think, typically greatest in high school. and then next greatest in middle school. And a lot of times it's either forgotten in elementary or we think it doesn't even have a place in elementary school. Katie, why do we think that career is important at the elementary level, do you think?
Well, I think it's important because you want to expose students to the various different job types and career pathways before they get to the level at which they're having to be more selective and hone in on specific courses that relate to specific occupations or career pathways. And elementary is that place. It's also a place where you can have the most fun in terms of how you are introducing different careers. Whereas in middle school and high school, you know, a lot of times our classroom guidance lessons or our groups, again, are a little bit more focused and centralized on specific skill building. And so elementary, I think, is that space because not only can you have more fun with it as a school counselor, you can have more speakers come in. You can remember at my elementary school, we had a career day that actually involved the parents. And so the parents came and you had more of a diversity of occupations that were shown and also a little bit more pride, right? Because the students were seeing their parents and their caregivers involved in the process. Whereas, as they grow and develop and they become more selective in their coursework and have a more, you know, more of a focus in terms of our interventions as school counselors, it can be a little bit more difficult to have access and that exposure to more of that diverse array of careers.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're doing fantasy play around career anyway at that age, right? In fact, it seems like a good time to take a moment and have a pop quiz. What was your fantasy career role that you played as a child? I think it would be fun to share that. Mine, I'll go first to give you two time to think. By the way, the audience right now, the look of panic on their face is palpable in the room. I fantasize about being a radio DJ. This is back during the time of tape recorders, and I had to listen for the songs to come on the top 40 radio or whatever station and hit record. And then I would dub them over to mixtapes so that I could pretend I was a radio DJ. Maybe Grace would say a precursor to me becoming a podcast host. I don't know. Some could say that. Grace, what was your fantasy play when you were a kid?
Mine was actually a flight attendant. I always imagined being in the air, and I just thought that it would be so much fun to be always, you know, like flying from one place to the other, and forever being on the plane. So I found that to be a lot of fun.
I can't tell you how much I love knowing that about you. And the next time I bring you a cup of coffee, I'm going to put on my flight attendant demeanor to make sure that you feel comfortable.
Please do.
Katie, what was your fantasy play as a kid?
Yeah, so I'm trying to think of if I actually played this out, but early on, one of the things that I really wanted to do was be a wildlife conservationist and work in Colorado reintroducing the wolves into Yellowstone. That was, for some reason, I remember that. I used to watch PBS, and there were several shows talking about the reintroduction of wolves, and wolves are my favorite animal. And so I already had a liking to working with animals. And so I really love the idea of being out in the woods and being in the national park system reintroducing mm-hmm. wolves. Mm-hmm.
And so things that I know about you is Grace, you travel quite a bit. And Katie, you spend a lot of time out hiking. In fact, I checked Instagram this morning. You were hiking in the woods just this weekend, I believe.
Yes.
Good. So even in this conversation, like, I feel lit up. I feel energized right now just talking about fantasy play from decades ago for all of us. It just makes me think, like, what benefit that gives students in a school setting to have that excitement of connecting career to a purpose, right? For being in school. If that's sort of innate in us, this passion for fantasy play, for career, for thinking about it, getting excited about it, then it might be fair to say that it's the adults in school systems that might tamp down the amount of career development activity that we get to do in schools. From your research and your experience in the field, how would you describe the landscape right now of openness to doing career work in schools where you have connections? Do we see a lot of career development intervention?
I would say not much. And like you mentioned earlier on, it looks like there's more career, I would say, college prep, not so much of career development at the high school level, because it's a completely different story when you are preparing students for college and all you are helping them do is apply to a variety of colleges. So to me, that is not career development. It's just a little piece of it. While you go back, if you go down to the middle school and elementary school, a little bit of it. Some schools do have career days once in a year, which is, again, good but too little. Mm-hmm. So there's not really much. And even I've heard from my own students that in the school setting that when I always ask that question, so how much of career is going on? And they say none. For many of them, it's none. And for some of them, oh, you know what? We had this career day or we had a career night, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Katie, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a really big focus on going into college, that post-secondary transition into college, and a lot of programming around that, whether it's, you know, work with outside community organizations or within schools, or even in the higher education level, a lot of the work that we do in terms of research with schools and in the realms of career development tends to be that transition into college and how many are going into college. And what's interesting is, like, here in New York, one of the things that I learned about was we have quite a few scholarships that are called, I think, Excelsior scholarships, and they can pay students full way. And one of the difficulties that they have is when they transition into colleges, right? We know that a lot of students, their first major isn't the major that they stick with. And unfortunately, with these types of scholarships, what happens is that they have to, the major that they choose is the one that they have to stick with. And so it really limits their ability to indulge in, like, electives and figure out, like, what is it they want to do, right? So as much as what we're putting effort into getting them into college, we're not really putting effort into, or as much effort into, again, kind of exposing them to the different ways to design their life, to design their career pathways, which could really help them then when they do get those access to funds and scholarships to take majors that align more with that design, align more with their direction.
Yeah. So if one were to say that I was prone maybe to advocacy and stirring the pot a little bit when I want to, what would be some tools if I were a school counselor that would be my best sort of arguments or my best sort of tools to use to advocate to? Well, let's start with, who do we need to advocate to? Am I advocating to teachers, to parents, to principals, to all? How do we think about creating some energy behind doing career development work in schools? Can always tell it's a good question when they both just stare at you, or a terrible question. I'm not sure which.
It's a good question, actually. And I think it is all the above. Because when you think about it, parents need to be involved in their career planning for their kids. Teachers need to be aware of the fact that even as they teach their usual curriculums, they can actually infuse some career information in their math class. For instance, if you are teaching anatomy, how about you share with the students what that anatomy will do for them past, you know, post, you know, high school, so that they can see the connection between what they are learning and what future careers they may be interested in. So I think we need to advocate at all levels. But to start up, probably we may want to educate the teachers, because there's not any one given time when career planning is or career development is scheduled. So I think the easiest way to reach most of the students is by teachers being able to infuse some career materials as they teach their regular curriculum.
Yeah, and I always think my spouse has got me into gardening in the last few years. So it really is like planting seeds, right? And so if we introduce career in elementary, it makes the career work in middle school more efficient, right? They're already in that mode. And it's the same way, if you do good career work in elementary and middle school, you have better career work that's being done than in high school. I see it the same way with parents, administrators, and teachers. Like, the earlier we start to get a consistent message out to them to plant those seeds of, oh, this is a part of it. And part of consistency is also easy, right? Like, there's a difference between asking a math teacher to include career in their teaching and giving them a lesson plan that we know is coming up in their curriculum. to use math in their classroom because they're not career experts, right? They don't have that sense of confidence in doing that. I see, Katie, I see you shaking your head. What's coming up for you as we talk about this?
I'm just thinking of my current students who are working as full-time school counselors in their second year, because in New York, they're allowed, they can do that. They get their master's their first year, and then they can be certified and working in schools. And so I have several that are in high schools, and you know, they're handed a career class, and they don't know, they don't have a curriculum. They don't know how to approach it. They don't know what to do. And it, you know, it's that risk of it becoming just another study hall, right? And so how do you provide tools to school counselors that get those spaces, which aren't often allocated, right? You don't often get those courses anymore. A lot of times those courses are cut. And then also, how do you advocate for more structural change? And so I agree with Grace and like evaluating and doing that power mapping of like, is this something that's policy? Is this something that is more cultural? In terms of the school culture, not really being career minded, but maybe having more of a deficit perspective when they think about their students. So you may have a district or a school within a district that has a high propensity of students who drop out or end up going into trade, not so much even trade schools, but they're remedial, you know, to catch up, especially right now. We're seeing that a lot. Like a lot of my students who are in high schools are struggling with retaining students who are really close to graduating, to have a lot of credits they need to make up. And so what are the structural aspects of it that need to be addressed? And what are the cultural aspects within the school that need to be addressed? And then partnerships. So I see also there's a lot of times a history between institutions, community organizations, higher ed institutions, and then the schools themselves that it could really present barriers to really forming some really meaningful partnerships. And so how do we advocate for some meaningful partnerships with colleges and institutions, you know, researchers like ourselves, right, who want to do meaningful work in schools, who want to provide those resources and tools, but have to kind of combat this history of harm that's been done. And then how do we form partnerships with parents? And so one of the reasons why at my school, at the elementary school, when I did Career Day, I, instead of just, you know, sending emails out to different organizations and asking for volunteers, I sent emails out to parents, was because that's another way of including parents, right? And partnering with parents, letting them know that they're valued, because, you know, how many times does a parent get asked to present about their job working in a fast food restaurant or working as a barber? And so there's definitely ways in which we can advocate at different levels, but really assessing what's more policy, what's, you know, historical that we need to address. And then how do we best partner with the resources within the school and outside in the community?
Yeah. And I think, you know, both of you are bringing up something important, which is, you know, for me is the social justice aspect of having a comprehensive career development approach in schools. Early in my career, I actually worked with credit recovery students that had been adjudicated through a school district and had been removed from the school to a companion school in a strip mall. And a lot of that work was around trauma and career and how they were thinking about their futures. I do want to just take a brief moment to allow both of you, you both have some deep experience and expertise working with marginalized populations that I don't see a lot in our literature and in our conversations at NCDA. So maybe Grace, I can come back to you. You've done quite a bit of work on with immigrant populations, but specifically African immigrant populations to the United States. Could you tell us a little bit about that specific student group and what you've learned about their needs when they are being educated within a US school system?
So African immigrant students face a lot of challenges in the country to try to navigate the school system as well as careers for a number of reasons, particularly those students who came with their parents to this country. Or even though they may have been born in this country and their parents were not born in this country, they really struggle to figure how to navigate the school system, and more so when it comes to college choice, college application, and the whole college transition. And one of the things that I've found out as I've worked with this group of students is the fact that parents have very narrow vision as pertaining to careers. They are only aware of careers that quote-unquote are perceived to be prestigious because the countries where most of these students come from, you are only considered of value if you pursue, for instance, a career in the sciences, IT, engineering, and they are not aware of all these other careers that are open to them. So one of the things that they really need to be able to, they need a lot of exposure to other careers, quote unquote, that are not part of the mainstream from which their parents may have come from. And so in the school setting, one of the things that I've found and from my research is that teachers as well as school counselors are not very well aware of the needs of this group of students. I like to call them the invisible immigrants because literally there's very little literature out there for, you know, on African immigrant students. And so one of the things I would love for school counselors to be able to do is to at least learn a little bit about the culture from which these students come from so that they can help them navigate the college application, the college choice, and also college finance, because they have no clue what FAFSA is. For many of them, they do not even know, parents are not even aware that their students can actually get funding for college, depending on what level of education the parents have. That said, we also have another challenge that I've actually have had to work with some of the parents. They push their students towards pursuing certain careers and they do not give them any option whatsoever. Case in point, a kid just was forced to pursue medicine and after 1 year he dropped out and he said, I can do this. And the parents are up in arms and they don't know what to do with this kid. And so I had a conversation with them to let the kid just choose what they are interested in, of course, with so many other factors taken into account. So in a nutshell, this is a population that needs a lot of support in the school setting and a lot need to be done for them before they can be successful.
Yeah, and I think this conversation is important for two reasons. One, we have a responsibility to sort of more hidden marginalized groups in schools, right? The ones that we might be talking about as explicitly in NCDA and in our literature and in our training programs. But they're also a bit of a stress test on the system. The issues that the students that, of the students and the families that you're describing are magnified because of our lack of knowledge, awareness, and skill in serving them, but then also can tell us about how the system as a whole isn't really serving students as fully. So, access to clear information about FAFSA. We've been doing that for 30 years in my career in education, and we're still not consistently good at it. Katie, I want to turn and you've specifically worked around career development and issues with Indigenous students in school systems. Can you tell us a little bit about the work and what you're learning about working with that population in schools?
Yeah, certainly. I would say I'm definitely emerging in that area. So I wouldn't say I was an expert, but I'm definitely, that's an area of interest of mine and one that I've been deeply passionate about. And so what I've learned thus far has been the diversity. So there's several federal tribes. There's over 100, over 500 federal really recognized tribes. There's over 100 state recognized tribes within the U.S. And that's not counting the nations within Canada and the nations within Mexico, that we may interface with as well within higher ed. And one of the things that I think often comes up within exploring career development with Indigenous populations, specifically those from nations within the United States, is the fact that there's a lack of data. So Tuck and Yang, in their 2012 article, metaphorization of colonization or decolonization, talked about this asterisking that often occurs. And what they're referring to is the fact that within schools, there may be such a small population of Native students that they're not counted within the data. They're actually represented by an asterisk. And that poses difficulties for school counselors who are wanting to advocate for and work with Native students and really for us as researchers, as well as kind of honing in on what's happening, right? What's happening with our Indigenous students as they go throughout the school K through 12 system and then move into college or the trades. And so that's definitely an area that needs some further development and exploration is what is happening. From my experience and talking with mostly adults who identify as Native, is there is depending on their identity salience, which is really important for counselors to cue in on, is the fact that not every Indigenous person is going to have the same cultural epistemologies, the same relationship to the land as others. It's important to know that the vast majority of Indigenous peoples within the United States live in urban areas. They don't live on territories and in rural areas. And so that's important because I think oftentimes we have a lens that, you know, every reservation looks like those in the, you know, in the West or in the Southwest, and that you're only in contact or could be in contact with Indigenous students in those areas. And that's not the case. And so having that understanding that you're going to be in contact with Indigenous students and that there's going to be a need to really explore and dive into, like, who are those students? What are their needs? What are their passions? Do they have a desire in their design of their life to contribute back to their community? And what are some of the barriers and things that they have to navigate in doing that? Because there's a lot of context that I can't describe here in the time that we have that really can make it difficult for individuals to contribute back to the nation in such a way that really helps strive towards decolonization and self-determination and supporting the sovereignty of the nation. But I think what's really important, again, for school counselors, advocates to capture is the fact that there's a lack of data and representation of students. When we're using even the ASCA model, they're not really coming up. They're not being seen. To note the identity salience, to really understand, is this a student whose family is enrolled in the tribe? Are they enrolled members? Because that's going to really determine what funds are available to them based on that identity. To understand that there may be students who identify with multiple identities, right? We have a lot of Black Indigenous students here in the Buffalo area that may not be enrolled in the nation, but identify as Black and Native. And so how do you, you know, what does that mean for that student? And how does that contribute to their thinking about, again, their life design, their career, their pathways? So I think it's, you know, just something to really hone in on as school counselors, that they may be a small population, so to speak, in your school, but as advocates, that doesn't mean that that dismisses, right, the fact that this is a population that has needs, that has passions that are unique to their identity, and that we need to support them in their career pathways and design.
Yeah. And I think what I hear from both of you, and I always try to be mindful of, like, we tend to clump identities together for our own understanding as counselors. That's not the lived reality of our students and our clients, right? And so we say African immigrants. The amount of diversity within that population is as much as the diversity of human experience as a whole. Same thing with Indigenous and Native cultures. I mean, hundreds of tribes spread out over millions of miles and all of the complexity. And so I think sometimes a mistake that counselors make in their training is to think that by reducing it to these broad categories, it's to help me as a person who identifies as white and from the US, for example, to understand an immigrant experience as a whole, an African immigrant experience as a whole and Indigenous as much as I can, but then the client still is the client. I think the idea of salience is really what I took the most from what you were saying, Katie, which is I have to let the client lead what's important to them. I have to let the student tell me what's important to them in this moment for this task, for this problem, for this decision. So we have opened about three big cans of worms that one podcast cannot address. Understanding career development in schools and getting connected to the resources around that. I'm reminded that NCDA has the school advisor credential as part of the credential commission. That might be a great start for something like that. understanding systems and advocacy to promote career development in schools, and then understanding diverse populations for which there are resources through NCDA for that as well. I just care about both of you and love working with both of you so much. Thank you for spending your time with us today. And I hope that this is a start of many more conversations you get to have with working school counselors and career professionals in schools. We'll put some of your information about your research and stuff like that in the show notes. And I hope that, that this gets out and you have many pleasant conversations in the future. Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.